No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We're excited to have with us tonight a special guest. In fact, she's a Shadow Politics alumni. That's so cool that we have alumni now. Her name is Maria Sanchez, and she's been on our show before. We had such a great conversation with her. We wanted to have her back to help us figure out what's going on politically these days. Maria is a respected broadcaster with her own show and a long, distinguished career in radio and television. She is a mom, a community activist, and she is a Republican, which is one of the reasons we value her opinion so much. As Democrats, it's important that we come together in civil discourse from time to time and discuss our differences so we can find solutions to the problems that face us all. That's really the idea behind this show, and we're excited to have Maria with us. It's great that she was nice enough to decide to join us again tonight, and we look forward to having an interesting conversation with her, and we want to hear from you. So call in or Skype us with your questions. Before I go any further, however, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who has run off to Kansas in search of Toto and the end of the rainbow. Kathleen, are you with us?
Yes, I'm slightly frozen, but I gather that's like, you know what, 64% of the United States right now is under snow. I mean, I just can't believe how cold it is here in Kansas. And it's coming your way, I think. So I'm going to be coming back tomorrow bringing all the cold weather again. It's unbelievable.
It's been cold here, too. Not as bad as it was when you left. So, but, yeah, we know it's coming back. So thank you for that. Before I let you introduce Maria, let me just say a couple of quick things about what's going on with statehood this week. We had a battle, which is kind of funny because we want to talk tonight about what's going on Capitol Hill between Republicans and Democrats. But locally, what's going on is that we passed an initiative in the November elections to legalize marijuana, and three congressmen have stood up against us in terms of actually implementing the law, and they've even threatened our mayor with jail time if she attempts to do it, because Congress passed a budget rider, put a rider on our budget that prohibits us from using our own money to implement the law. But much to her credit, our mayor, Muriel Bowser, our new mayor, stood up to the Congress and said, we're going to do this. This is the will of the people. This is what I've been elected to do. So she went ahead, and as of 12:01 on Friday morning, the law was implemented, and we'll see what the next step is going to be as this drama unfolds, because the people on Capitol Hill are still threatening her and vowing to make sure the law doesn't go in effect, but yet the law is in effect It's going to be an interesting scenario as it unfolds. I also would like to take a moment just to mention the passing of Minnie Minoso. You have to be an old guy like me to remember Minnie, but he was a player for the Chicago White Sox who broke the color barrier with them. First black player at his first at bat, he hit a 2-run homer, had an incredible career, 3 Golden Gloves, made most valuable player many times. And he also played for the Washington Senators one season here in Washington. So our condolences go out to his family. He was 92 years old, so he lived a good life. But Minnie Minoso, our hats are off to you for all the great things you've done. Now, Kathleen.
Yes.
It's your turn.
Oh, my gosh, it's about time. No, I'm just joking. I mean, I'm going to introduce Maria Sanchez, who has just done so many things. I mean, she's produced radio shows and talk shows and has her own show. Excuse me. I believe it was in San Francisco and has been involved in the Republican Party and a mom. And you know how much moms do. They do everything. So my hats go off to all the hats that she has on. So, Maria, thank you for joining the show.
Well, Kathleen, thank you for that. And Senator, thank you again for the re-invitation to be a guest on your show. I'm actually very flattered, so I appreciate that.
Well,
and I admire both of you.
You actually have a standing invitation anytime you want to come on, Maria.
Well, I'm honored, honestly, so I want you to know that. And just to manage your listeners' expectations about me, because oftentimes when people say title, we all have these preconceived notions about who this person might be and where they're coming from. And while I am a lifelong Republican, I'm socially terribly liberal and fiscally conservative. So even amongst my cohorts, they are like, oh, she's so liberal. I don't even know why she's got an R after her name, because I believe in the rights of, you know, gays, and I think that abortion should be taken out of the party platform. I'm also a practicing Roman Catholic. I think that priests should get married and women should be priests. And, you know, so I just wanted your listeners to know that I'm not a rank and file kind of Republican.
Well,
you know.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Go ahead, Michael. No, I was going to say. We're so excited to talk. Go ahead, Michael. I'll finish up.
Well, I was just going to say that the one of the problems I see with politics today on both sides of the aisle, Maria, is that we have less people like you involved. You know, I have a brother who is also a Republican, social liberal, president of one of the top community colleges in America, very socially liberal, but a former Air Force pilot, very strong on military when it comes to the military and defense and other things that he feels the Republican Party has always stood for. So I think that Paul would fall into the same category that you would as a liberal Republican. But I've got to tell you, I'm very concerned that we see less and less of this in both parties. We see people moving to the extremes and less people in the center to bring us together to coalesce around issues. And I find that very troublesome. I don't know about you.
You know, what I've seen that has happened in that regard is that because folks who are really staunch supporters of the party but don't want to be aligned with the fringes, if you will, right-wing Christian Tea Party folks and the Republican Party and then maybe really liberal Democrats on the other side, they started to register or re-register, which I believe you did, Michael, as independents or declined to state.
Yes. Well, I re-registered as an independent to get around a provision that we have in the law here in the District of Columbia that 2 seats on our city council need to be held by people that are of the non-majority party, which we're the only jurisdiction in America that does that. So I've re-registered as a Democrat. But, you know, I consider myself, I'm not one of those liberal Democrats, much like you, Maria. I'm not one of those liberal Democrats that feels like compromising with conservatives or compromising with Republicans is somehow a capitulation. And I see that today on my side. I don't get to deal with a lot of Republicans because we only have six Republicans in the whole out of 670,000 Washingtonians. There's only like six or seven of them that are Republicans. We're the most Democratic place on the planet in terms of Democratic Party. But I do see that more and more in my party, that people are standing up saying, rather than compromise with the Republicans, I'd rather not do anything at all. And I think that's so dangerous.
Well, and you hit it right on the head with what the trouble that we had on Friday is that people, Boehner wants to compromise, and they're saying he's lost his base because the reasons Republicans were put into power, you know, the House majority, the largest in 70 years, is because they campaigned for getting elected to stop President Obama on immigration. So therefore, anything that doesn't follow along that line, they don't feel that they represent their constituents. But rather than do what's practical, they're doing what's political, and that's where the problem is.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because I think both parties really have to rely on their youth. My son has always been a Republican, and he went to CPAC, in fact, a year ago. But he recently has told me, I think the basis for him being a Republican was that he saw he would have college loans, go out there in the workforce, and really not be able to make a lot of money. He doesn't see the dream that, you know, we had where we'll be able to work hard and we'll save our money, buy a house. He doesn't see that dream. And so his big issue has been taxes, that everything is taxed so heavily. And so he had been part of the Republican Party. But recently he said to me that he didn't think he could find a place for himself there because while, you know, the tax issue was a big deal and he's very fiscally conservative, but he doesn't really care about whether or not, you know, gays get married or all that kind of stuff. In fact, it's surprising when we talk to the president of the Republican, young Republicans at the University of Arizona, they were for gay marriage. So it seems to me that the Republicans have a real, you know, they have a real chance of getting the youth into their party, but they're somehow tripping it up with all these, their hard stand on, I guess, the social issues. And is it that they just, that the right has just got like a hold on the Republican Party where the moderates cannot seem to get ahead anywhere?
I think that the problem is that the folks who vote in the primaries are the ones who determine who the general election is, and only the zealots seem to be voters, and they seem to be more polarized, either right or left. And so that's why my big thing is that if we had more people turn out to vote, they would actually represent more of the people and not the fringe of the parties.
Right. Well, I agree with you. That's very true.
Yeah, and I think that's a problem that we have even here in the District of Columbia. You would think that in the nation's capital that we would just be ahead of the rest of the country in voter participation, but we're not. I mean, we have less than half the people in the district who are registered to vote. Less than half of them vote. And that's the people that are registered. There are, of course, people who are eligible to vote that don't register. And it's the same problem. In D.C. especially, once the Democratic primary is over, the race is over. We as Democratic candidates go out on Election Day and give out donuts to people that work at the polls because it's a slam dunk for us. No Democrat has ever lost. And in fact, we got a lot of attention in the last election because there was an independent who was once a Republican who ran against our mayor, the woman that won, and was the Democratic candidate. And he had a shot. He didn't win. He got beaten pretty soundly. But just the fact that he had a shot at it piqued the interest of the news media because it had been so long since there was a Democratic candidate that was even challenged in the District of Columbia. So this is a big problem for us too, that well, once the primary is over, it's over.
Kathleen, you raised a good point about our youth, and I'm active. I'm a founder and past president of a women's Republican group that's under the state of California and then under a federal, the National Association of Federated Women. And we're making a big effort to go after the young people in the campuses that are in our community and get them involved in grassroots efforts. And we're actually having a good response. They're organically already there, but they're so young yet they didn't really know about engagement. So we're bringing them along with us. We give them discounts at our meetings in terms of the pricing. We have them help us walk precincts. We have them do get out the vote calls, register voters. And we're finding that they're attracting more youth by their enthusiasm. So it's right. Like this whole little cottage industry that we're just realizing we've been ignoring.
Right. And you know, and when I talk to my son, because, you know, I have been a lifelong Democrat, although I'm an independent now because I have a lot of issues with the Democratic Party, the one thing that he just seemed to say to me, which was kind of heartbreaking, was he just didn't see the promise that America once had. And he didn't feel that he would be able to really do much with his life or career. Because I guess of all, you know, right away they have these big loans. And you're looking at, you know, maybe making 10. He was actually working in a hospital, making about 10 bucks an hour, and seeing that being full-time, he wasn't able to pay the rent, a few bills, but he was seeing how difficult it really is to be out there in the real world. And he was saying, you know, and I fear for the Democratic Party because I don't think that the Democratic Party doesn't seem to give the youth that kind of hope that they'll be able to make it, you know, and make it in that, have a house, have two cars, you know, the dreams that we used to have, and maybe that's not possible, but he's looking for that, and he's not seeing it, definitely in the Democratic Party, and now he's kind of wondering where he's going to go, because he's not seeing it. They're so closed in the Republican Party on social progressive issues that he doesn't see a fit there for him, too, so it's going to be interesting, and you know, it was interesting, too, when Michael and I were working out there getting signatures, how few of the youth will stop to even sign anything or ask what it's about. Do you find that too? In California, you have that situation?
Well, I think that has been the case, but by the law of attraction, we're finding that the young folks the campuses came to us, which was kind of odd because we should have thought about this ourselves. I mean, we are the adults in the room, but they want to know how can they help? Can they intern? What can they do? And because it's galvanizing them, they're attracting like people. So I think we're onto something here. And again, this is a grassroots level. We're doing it as a county first, but I think if we can take this prototype and share it, it's good for everybody. But Kathleen, my eldest son is just like yours. He has his bachelor's degree from the University of Southern California. He's working for Uber for 12 bucks an hour doing quality control, customer support.
Wow. Yeah. And you see, my son, let me just say, my son was in the hospital and contracted tuberculosis. So, you know, he was working in a poor hospital, which I thought, well, this is great. You know, what a great thing. He's working in the Catholic poor hospital, you know, so great to give back. And then because of all the immigration issues, and one of it that people don't address is the health issues, all these, you know, diseases are coming back, and he contracted tuberculosis. So, you know, it's kind of, he's like, here I am, you know, trying to give back, and it's kind of such a mess. And so, yeah, it's a hard thing looking at, you know, compared to what I looked at when I was his age. It's not a very, you know, I think bright kind of picture. He already sees a lot of problems he's going to have to face. So it's sad that we talk about a great economy, but it doesn't seem to have the jobs that these kids should be able to get when they get out of school.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
That certainly was a difference for us. You know, how true it was. I mean, you know, this is anecdotal. I don't have any statistics on it, but I certainly believed, and all my friends believed, that if you went to college and you got a decent education, there would be a job for you. And there certainly was for me and most everybody I know. You know, and that phenomenon, we were talking, Kathleen was telling you about the signature thing. Kathleen and I laughed about it, that we couldn't get young people to sign our petitions because they were skeptical. And we would say to ourselves, here these kids will put everything out on Facebook. They'll tell you the most personal things about themselves on Facebook that you don't even want to know. But yeah, they won't sign a petition, which is obviously a government document, because I think they're suspicious of what it really is. And I think that comes from the fact that they feel, you know, we kind of felt that the government, you know, might have been inept, and the government might not necessarily have been on your side, but the government wasn't somebody that you had to be suspicious of all the time.
Right.
I think that's changed. I think I don't think young people have the same trust that we did, and there's a reason for that. We're not delivering the way we used to. But I have a question for you, Maria. Since you're reaching out to women on campuses, one thing that I noticed about CPAC, who met here in Washington this week, you know, the Conservative Political Action Committee, there were a lot of guys showing up for their first beauty contest in the Republican Party for the presidential nomination in 2016. But where are the women? Where's Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin and, you know, the women that are there? No women potential presidential candidates on the Republican side that you see?
Not anybody really viable, unfortunately. Here with this week in California has been the equal pay for equal work. We've had to have legislation now come down in the state, and the same legislator introduced legislation last year to have 10% of all boards in California that are public to have women on it. I mean, we're scratching to get to equal, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the latest statistics are that women are making 84 cents on the dollar for every dollar that a man earns. That's in this day and age. And I'm really active in my Rotary, and there's some younger bucks that are in my group. And by younger, I say, you know, the CEOs of Rec and Park and that kind of stuff. And Rotary just allowed women 20 years ago, and it had to go to the Supreme Court of the United States. And he leans over to me and he goes, isn't that crazy to think that you couldn't be in this group 20 years ago? And I said, yeah. You know, I mean, that's not very long ago.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting? I'm in Rotary, too, and actually I'm a third generation. And in Mexico, right, you know, one of the biggest Rotary clubs in Alpia, the Sonora, Mexico, is just across from where I live. They do not allow women. And, in fact, it's very touchy when we go to their events because we've had all-women presidents the past 5 years. And it's just strange to go to a club where, here you are, you're representing the Rotary Club as a president, but you go into Mexico and there's no women in theirs. And you know what? I think you see it, too. If it wasn't for the women, I think Rotary would have a real issue with membership.
Yes, agreed.
Well, and that's one of the thing about getting women into these places is that the more women you get in, the more women you'll have. You know, I often quote, I have a sister who would have been in her 70s. My older sister raised me. But when she graduated from law school, from GW Law School, she was one of two women. And today, GW Law School graduates more women than they graduate men. So, you know, it's all about getting women. The more women you get, the more women you'll have further on down the line. So it is so important to get them into leadership positions. But being in politics, I can understand why somebody wouldn't want to do it. It's a hard way to go.
Well, let me ask you something, Maria. You know, what we've been talking to in the shows, we were talking about the ERA and the fact that it has not been passed. And, you know, they always have to, I guess, every 2 years get an extension so that it doesn't, you know, they don't have to start all over again. What do you think about the ERA? Do you think that's something that's necessary?
I think it's important to keep the structure in force I'm afraid that if it wasn't, then it might just erode slowly over time. And I know that doesn't sound like a Republican either, but I was around when Title IX was enacted. I mean, I was a senior in high school, and our a couple girlfriends got at full ride athletic scholarships in the fall. And when I started playing basketball, there were six to a team, and only two could go full court because we were girls and we were too delicate.
Yeah, maybe you didn't want to jump around, run around with your delicate in things inside of you, might, you know, jiggle them. I remember that too.
Well,
you know, when we were talking, Michael and I, the worst in not signing anything were the young women. Probably, I'd say 21 to 24. They were the worst. And I would yell at them, do you even know Title? I mean, you have to get involved. You have to care. And I would be the most frustrated with those young girls. And now when I think I was in fact, we had a Rotary lunch and we had some seniors out for lunch. And I asked them, they were all girls. They were all there because they were on tennis and swimming and all that. And I asked them, do you know what Title IX is? They had no clue. Absolutely no clue what Title IX was.
And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know?
I think it's a bad thing.
They should understand their history, but...
Yes, they don't. It's like a gay man not understanding what AIDS did to the population. And I know some gay young men who say, I'm not going to worry about protection because if and when I get it, there'll surely be a cure by that time. And the older gay men are so affronted and insulted, they sit them down and say, you need to know our history. You have to understand what we've been through. But it's the arrogance of youth, I think. And I think that's true of some young gals. They didn't have the impediments that we had. And so it hasn't been that difficult for them to break through the glass ceiling because they didn't know that there was one.
Exactly.
Whereas a lot of my career,
let me take this moment that Maria has handed me by talking about being a female basketball player to point out that my alma mater, the University of Maryland women's basketball team, is the number one basketball team in the Big Ten. They are undefeated. So go Terrapin women. But I think that's true. I think that, you know, there's that old saying that God takes care of children and fools. And when you reach adulthood, you realize that, if God hadn't had his hand in your life as a young person, you probably wouldn't have made it because you did so many foolish and, risky things. So that's very true. And I think we have just as big a problem in the Democratic Party. You may see a hard time getting young Republicans, but I think we're losing to independents. Here in Washington, a third of our registered voters are independents, which is crazy because we have preferential primaries in the district, and the primaries are the only thing that counts. I mean, being an independent in a district is like throwing your vote away because you don't get to vote in a primary election.
Well, that's what's scary, I think, for both parties. That's where we probably have the most risk, is that people don't want to be identified with the squabbling that's going on. So they're saying, yes, I want to vote, but I don't want to have a title behind me. I'm independent.
Right. No, I think that's true.
And I think what you said earlier, Maria, about I forget what your comment was about physical responsibility, you know, that you're physically responsible but socially liberal. You know, we've lost those kind of things, I think, at the core of our party, because that was the mantra of the Republican Party when I was growing up, that they were fiscally responsible. That was really what, more than anything, defined Republicans in my mind, and Democrats were defined by their social programs. Now, I just listened to the President of the United States. I was lucky enough to talk to Obama last week when the DNC was in town, and I listened to the president talk about how Republicans are trying to redefine themselves. But I think Democrats, I kept on thinking to myself, aren't Democrats trying to do exactly the same thing?
I would think that it would behoove everybody to do that because it's not working what we've been doing.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think? I remember speaking to you about the shutdowns that happened, I guess it was about a year and a half ago. But again, the Republicans have come back with, you know, okay, we're going to, the threats of shutting down. We'll only, fund you till for another week and then another week. And it's such a terrible way to run an agency like Homeland Security, where, you know, you've got the border patrol and you've got the guys at the you know, airports and the custom agents. I mean, why do they stick with this when definitely last time they got a lot of heat and a lot of people were really upset with the Republican Party for approaching business this way?
I honestly don't think that it's in their highest good to do what they're doing, frankly. I'm afraid to say I think it looks like we're spoilers and that we're playing chicken, basically. And who's going to, you know, swerve their car away from a head-on collision first? And especially if you're talking about the safety and security of our country. I mean, we're not just talking about wages here. And especially now, with all that's going on with the terrorism and ISIS and Syria, and I mean, this is not the time to have this kind of a conversation. And Nancy Pelosi apparently has suggested that she is going to pull the immigration language out, but the Republicans say they haven't received those assurances. So maybe she's trying to be a little more moderate and compromise in her positioning. I don't know what your guys' take on that is, but I think that would be huge if we could just make it about the homeland security issues first.
Yeah, I think it would be too. And I think that she is, that's a proper assessment of what she's trying to do, Maria. But I'm afraid that there may be some hardliners that say, you know, this is just a maneuver for the Democrats to get what they want. And so I hope they don't stand in the way of that. But we certainly need more of that, and I think the president has taken a hard line, just like Bonner's taken a hard line. And I think you're right. I think they're playing chicken with each other, and whoever gets stuck with this in the end, it's more like musical chairs, because we all know that Homeland Security is going to be ultimately funded. They did this 7-day emergency funding thing on Friday, but who's ever left standing when the music stops, I think they're in trouble politically. If it's Bonner or if it's President Obama, both of them are in trouble if one of them's left standing holding the bag.
The one thing that I see that Boehner can't help is because he's got those 52 in the House that voted down the 3 weeks. So they're saying, you know, that he's losing his power base, too, because he's got maybe 54, but not 60, which is why he has to be more conciliatory. But I would think that President Obama, he's got the legacy of his history weighing in the wings here.
Yes,
and
he does.
Yeah.
I would think that he would want to be viewed favorably as somebody who was bigger than the bickering and not be as hardline as he seems to be. Because
yes.
I think that when we reflect upon him, we will reflect more favorably than being hardline and, you know, veto power in the executive office and all that sort of thing. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would think that his ego is such that maybe it would be a good time to be the bigger guy in the room, if you will.
Well, I would hope that he would be. And I think that's always hard for a president, you know. But I think you're right that those are the presidents that we really remember. When we look at somebody like Lyndon Johnson, for example, who was not a particularly well-liked president, he didn't even run for re-election because of the Vietnam War and how troublesome that was for him. But when we look back at civil rights, you know, this was a guy in Congress who was not a civil rights leader. If anything, he was somebody that stood in the way of a lot of progressive civil rights legislation when he was in Congress. But when he came to the White House, he saw what the destiny, what the civil rights movement was, and how important his role was, and what his legacy was, and he changed. But I don't think that's an easy thing to do. I think it's a hard thing to do. But I think if you do it, I think you're absolutely right. You're remembered fondly in history for it.
Maria, let me ask you a question about the Republican Party in California. You know, I have some Republican friends out there, but, you know, and they complain constantly about the high taxes of California, and they live in San Diego, and it's just so expensive. Do you see the Republican Party coming back in California, or are there some new, you know, kind of stars out there in your party?
You know, we have that conversation often because we lament the fact, you know, that we're Reagan country and we've got the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library here, and you know, all those things that remind us of what role we once had as a party and as in the state. And I have to say that one of our friends said that the Republican Party has a 40 to a 50 year cycle in the state of California, and we're getting to that point. But I mean, like, I was Meg Whitman's spokesperson for the greater Los Angeles area when she was running for governor, and I thought if anybody could do it, it would be her because of, you know, her business acumen and her smarts and her legacy and her money and her marriage and her children and, you know, on and on and on. But unfortunately, the unions really do dictate a lot of what goes down in the state in terms of its politics.
It's interesting because, you know, if you look at New York and California, the unions, it's really one of the few places they still have such a stronghold. Maybe yeah, the city of Chicago, but, you know, the unions are such a thing of the past. It's amazing because I have some really very right-wing Republican friends, and they just, you know, the minute I talk to them, it's all about the Democrats and their taxes. So it's just an interesting thing, you know. I think removing myself from the Democratic Party, I look at both, and they have so much that they have to do to really work on making the country better. And I just hope that they'll do it. And I wish there was an independent party. I mean, Arizona has more independents than either registered Republicans or Democrats, and there's just no one to lead that third party effort or moderation or moderates or whatever you would want to call us. It's a shame.
Revealing that people are so, what you just said, Kathleen, is so revealing that people aren't finding their needs met in the two established parties. So they're moving away to be independent, if you will, regardless of how you know, which way you go. Do you have decline to state too?
Well, in Arizona, no. I'm not sure, actually, to tell you the truth.
What's that?
We have independence, but we also have something called DTS, decline to state. And those are people who don't even want to be identified with any organization, but they want to be registered to vote. So they don't want you to know. Yeah. So we've got this surge of folks leaving the flock. But they're not finding what they want in their flock if you can't run somebody who's a viable candidate that represents, quote, the majority of people in Arizona.
Exactly. And that's very true. And I think even though Michael hates this whole, we've had arguments about it, I do think that the Democrats got a lot of problems and there's a lot of corruption. The Republicans seem to be too much fixated on just this couple of issues, you know, whether the social issues and they don't seem like Arizona. If the Republicans were as good as they said about, you know, doing well in the state and bringing industry and prosperity, let me tell you, Arizona is at the bottom of the barrel on all states on all issues, and it's been completely controlled and run by the Republicans for about the past 10 years. So it's just amazing, you know, how you can see so much disconnect. And there's nothing there that's grabbing it. So I think I'm with Maria. Sorry, Michael, but I think there has to be a third party. Otherwise, you know, and then nobody has anyone to flock to or to go to, and you become disenchanted and disconnected, and you don't care about the Republicans or the Democrats.
Can I remind you of your great third party candidates? Ross Perot.
Colin Powell.
Well, Colin Powell, yeah, okay.
Yes, but he did.
Bob Perot, and who's the advocate, the consumer advocate?
David Horowitz.
Yeah.
David Horowitz.
You know, come on, guys. And I think of Italy, you know, some country like Italy that's got a multi-party system, and oh, my Lord. We don't want our political system to turn into... everybody gets to run the government for 3 weeks. How does that work?
Much better than it works now.
But Michael, I don't believe in a third party because I do think, as you mentioned, that all they've been is spoilers. But what Kathleen was saying and what seems to be trending is, whether we like it or not, people are disengaging from the two major parties to try to find something that works for them.
Yes.
Because it's not the Republicans and it's not the Democrats.
That's right. And I think as Republicans and Democrats, we need to step up to the plate and accept that and try to figure out ways to get people back in the party. Like you're talking about your grassroots effort with women. I think we need to do more of that and say to young people, instead of telling them what they should want. And that's our biggest problem as liberals. You know, we always talk down to the country, and it really bothers me as a liberal. We come off with the attitude that you really don't want a gun. You're just not smart enough to figure that out. And let me as a liberal tell you why you don't want a gun. And we need to get over that. And we need to actually listen to people and see what they really want and find a way to incorporate that in our party and inspire people. You know, I don't think we're inspiring young people anymore. You know, we were all inspired by John F. Kennedy and people like that to get involved, Dr. King. And I just don't see the leaders out there that are inspiring young people anymore.
Well, and what we're doing with our college campus recruitment is men and women. So mm-hmm. What's great about that is that these young men who are, you know, registered to vote age, they're getting involved in our group too. And then that's exposing them to the local politics, because we don't work just for women. We work for responsible Republicans getting elected. So it's not about gender in that regard with our recruitment, which
I agree. You know, I remember when my grandfather was very involved in the democratic process, but they used to call us the Pinto Democrats because they said that in Cochise County that the Democrats changed their spots. But what we did was we voted for the person, not for the party. So, you know, you basically knew everyone. You knew who was a good guy and who wasn't. It didn't matter what, you voted for the person, and maybe that's what we need to get back to.
Well, I'll tell you, I have always voted Republican or abstained. And I have a girlfriend who was on city council for 9 years and mayor two or three times, and she stepped up to run for assembly. And it was in the primaries. And I swear to goodness, my pen hung over her name for the longest time because she was the best candidate. And I was like, can you do this, Maria? Can you do it? Can you do it? And I did it. And it was like, and I suffered major persecution for doing that, I have to say. Wow. It was very ugly amongst the Republican women, and I thought, this is why sometimes women get a bad name, because the cattiness was horrific.
It's so true, and I just wanted to say, my son was upset. I think this would upset him. In Arizona, there was a gentleman who had run for, I think he was a state legislator, but he had voted for increasing the Medicare. There's something to do about Medicare, so older people could get their Medicare sooner or something. They were trying to stop it in Arizona. And because he voted with the Democrats, the Republican Party got rid of him. He was a great guy. He was a great Republican. He did most of, you know, what the platform is. But on this one instance, he disagreed with, you know, the main party and voted his conscience, and he's no longer serving, and it's a real shame.
Well, kind of what happened with Schwarzenegger when he was governor. He incited Republicans because he kept going across the aisle, you know, over and over and over, and they were very unhappy with him.
And I think some of that has to do with the fact that we are becoming, you know, we're turning the parties more into issue-based rather than having a core set of values, because that's very typical behavior in, let's call them public interest or political movements. For example, I remember in the women's movement, they had a litmus test, and that was abortion. And if you weren't for abortion, you couldn't be a member of NOW. You couldn't. I had friends who were fundamentalist Christians who believed that women should make the same amount of money that men should, that they should be protected the way men are on the law, that they went along with everything, but they believed in right to life. They didn't believe in abortion, and they were summarily drummed out of the National Organization of Women. So I think the more we become issue oriented rather than oriented to a set of core beliefs, I think that we see more and more of that. And it's unfortunate.
Well, and the irony is that the Republican Party historically has been very good to women in general, in terms of the suffrage movement and all those sorts of really critical issues. But it's not known for that, and I believe it's because it's these right-wing Christian white men that are the ones that we see as the Republican Party. And
yeah. That's true.
Since I was a guest on your show last year, I put a petition on MoveOn.org to send to the RNC chair to remove abortion from the Republican Party platform. And it went absolutely nowhere.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, and we face the same thing. When we worked for Jimmy Carter, for example, we just took it on the chin of being, not the party of defense. We were somehow against the military and against a strong defense. And it used to kill me because I would say to myself, here Carter is a nuclear submarine captain. Look at all the wars that the country has been in. Who's been at the helm during wartime? Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Woodrow Wilson. How did we get this image of being weak on defense? And I think it was the same thing, that we became identified with the kind of, tree-hugging hippie liberals that I happen to be a member of that party, but we were the tree-hugging hippie liberals, that just didn't care about defense. And so I understand that, and I think
interesting because, I have a lot of problems with the Democrats, and I saw if I was to say anything at the DNC meeting, it would be, you have to say certain things. If you say other things, they go against you. But, I talk about this with Michael, but if I was to say it amongst Democrats, they'd probably say, run me out of town, because I believe in identification when you vote. I believe that people should have ID when they go and they vote, so we know if they're a citizen and we know that they're who they say they are. And you would think that that's the worst thing possible for any Democrat. I mean, I'm going to be run out of the party for thinking such deep, terrible thoughts. And that's the problem, because not all of us, we can't, and that's what our parties have become. You have to think this way, you have to act this way, you have to look this way, instead of being a place where different thoughts can be expressed and maybe come with a common solution, so that we embrace everyone. I think that that's a real problem when you can't even speak in your own party and have a difference of opinion without being afraid of what they'll do to you.
It is true, and that's where the lockstep swinging the arm thing scares me, because I'm as far to the left of the tent of the Republican Party with my left foot outside the tent, pulling it that way, but I'm still in it, the tent. And that's why when the furor arose with MoveOn.org, the Republicans didn't want to sign it because they were afraid, because it was on Move On. And I looked at other, what do you want to call those, action places? But Move On is the gorilla in the room. And then the Democrats didn't want to sign it because they like us continuing to shoot ourselves in the foot. Why would they want to sign something to help us get more reasonable and more practical? So, because when the Democrats took the death penalty out of their party platform, that helped them tremendously. And that's all I'm trying to show. Take a social issue out of a political arena. It has no business being there. I don't care how you feel about abortion, but it is, has nothing to do with politics.
Right. Well, that would help the Republican Party immensely. And just to follow through on your analogy, Marie, about having one foot outside the tent, please understand Kathleen is the woman outside the tent pulling up the tent stakes. She's out running around the back of the tent, pulling up all the tent stakes, trying to get the damn thing to collapse. And that's why, you know, she works with me, and she's my Luca Brasi. When I want to start trouble with somebody, I send in Kathleen. So I just want to be clear about that.
That is true. That is true. I'm not too afraid. Forever.
But see, I know, I guess maybe this is what happens when we get older. Here's where wisdom comes in instead of, you know, passion. I think we can't dismantle it because it's too entrenched. So we just need to move it. I mean, again, I'm going to say the same thing about the Catholic Church. Pope Francis, I think, is fortunately taking us into a more moderate, reasonable agenda. And I know so many people who aren't Catholic who admire him, and I think that's fabulous because then we don't look like this old, you know, unforgiving, unreasonable, isn't open to change kind of organization. We, you know, if you don't change, you don't thrive, you don't survive.
Well, as somebody that was raised a Catholic, I agree with you 100%. Although my Italian grandmother would probably be upset because, you know, she always thought that you had to be Italian to be a pope. And we often say, thank God you didn't live long enough to see a non-Italian pope. but I agree with you. I think this guy is great. And I think he may be the salvation of what has been the world's largest religion. But in this country, especially, we see it falling off. So
yeah,
I think you're right.
Time.
We need to get our politicians. He's coming to address Congress. So maybe we can, maybe some of that will wear off on them. And, you know, they'll start to be a little more negotiable with each other.
Well, so is Netanyahu, right? He's this
Netanyahu. Yes.
And I understand that our vice president is going to be out of the country.
That's right. That's what they're saying. He's not going to be there. Only Kerry, I think, is going to be there.
Yeah.
Maria, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't understand why. Why wouldn't he stay where he belongs as chair? And we're our friends and allies with Israel. And I mean, I don't understand this at all.
I don't understand it either. That's a good point. I wish we had more time to talk about that because we're running out of time here. But I absolutely agree with you. You know,
I mean, I love Israel, and Israel has a right to be the state that we allowed it to be, or it was created to be. And this man's the leader, and he's coming to the United States. Why wouldn't we be there to support him?
We should be. And you know, that's something that we forget sometimes, Maria, that Israel was created by the United States, the British, and the French. You know, they didn't, a bunch of Jews didn't just drive out in the desert one day and you know, decide that that was going to be their country. We handed it. We're the people that started the problem over there. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. We ought to be here. We ought to meet. If they want to meet with both sides, that's one thing. But they certainly should meet with the Israelis because they are our ally. And they're our strong ally in the area.
Yes. And they're good ones, too, I might add.
Yes, they are. And you know what? We had planned to run take a break and run a song in honor of Maria Sanchez being on our show. But unfortunately, we've talked to the very end because she's such an interesting guest. We only have 90 seconds left. We're going to play California Dreamin' because we all want to be in California with you, Maria. But unfortunately, some of us are stuck out here in the cold. But anyway, thank you for coming on again. And I want to give you a minute to have the last word, and Kathleen, because I have no other choice but to give her the last word. She'll take it if I don't give it to her. So please, thanks again for coming on, and tell us one thing you want to say that you haven't had a chance to say.
Well, actually, I ran the successful reelection campaign for our mayor in November, and then I'm running another campaign for a special election on June 2nd, but I've just been accepted to Pepperdine University to get my doctorate in psychology. So one of the psychologists.
Oh, my gosh.
Can I tell you that I went to Pepperdine University one day, and I got out of my car, and when I didn't know what it was. I saw it, and I didn't know what it was. And when I saw that it was a university, I said to myself, why didn't I go to school here?
Yeah.
God, it's so beautiful. It is beautiful. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you so much, Maria, for coming on. Hopefully we'll, you know, catch up with you. Congratulations, because I was running Michael's campaign for city council, and we, with out of 15 and, like, what, Michael, $20,000, we were able to get third place out of 15, and these people were well-stocked with money, well-stocked with political machines. So I know what it is like to be in those trenches, and we feel for you, and it's so – we're glad that someone like you is working on the other side, because, you know, we can at least talk and I think have a great dialogue in the future. So much success to anybody you're supporting.
Thank you very much.
And, of course, these are nonpartisan things.
All right. Thanks very much, America. Thank you.
Okay, America. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks again to our special guest, Maria Sanchez, soon to be Dr. Maria Sanchez. Thanks so much, America. Thanks for listening.